I'm going to sustain Mr. Abrams' objection.
Okay.
The statement of who the lessee is, is stricken from the record.
Can you move to strike?
Yes, your motion is stricken.
Yes, it would be okay.
Okay. As far as whether or not how these negotiations took place in the time frames, I'm going to deny your motion to exclude on relevance grounds. So please proceed, Mr. Cumlin.
Yes, just for the record, in our protest, one of the things we cited was the language of the ability of the lessor to provide 100% financing. So who the lessor is was brought up and directed by us in our documents.
Lessor or lessee?
Lessor. They're both a lessor and a lessee.
And one is a lessee, there's a lessor and there's a sub-lessor. We have a lease, a ground lease. There's a lessor and a lessee, you know?
Okay, Mr. Abrams, there's no objection here. I've already ruled on your prior objection. Mr. Cumlin, could you please proceed with questioning this witness?
Yes. Mr. Harris, in the exhibit list presented by your counsel in this case, it's indicated that one of the documents that is to be an exhibit is the lease agreement, the draft lease agreement. Have you reviewed that draft lease agreement?
No.
Do you know who requested it be prepared?
Well, the normal drafts of all these documents, these are normal requirements needed in the event there's a contract to be signed. That there's a requirement that we just have it ready and have all parties review it concurrently. Make some tweaking, I guess, if you will, of the language. But that's the normal document.
I understand it's a normal document. The question was, do you know who requested it be prepared?
No.
Between January of 2009 and August of 2009, did you ever travel off island with the proposer with regard specifically to this RFP?
Objection. That would be privileged and it's irrelevant.
Mr. Pelosh?
I don't know how it's privileged. The situation, I'm not asking where they went. I haven't asked them where they went or anything like that, what was discussed, what they did.
Okay. Mr. Abrams, I'm going to overrule your objection. As the official travel paid for by the people of Guam of any government official is not secret, nor is it confidential, okay? So as to where he went, that is not part of the protective order, okay? So Mr. Cumlin, please proceed.
Is I going to repeat the question?
No. The answer is no.
During these proceedings, the negotiations, you indicated that the selection committee was the negotiator?
Correct.
And did you participate with the selection committee in those negotiations?
I participated with some members who requested clarity from my office on the policy level.
Okay. So if there was a sit-down meeting between the offeror and the selection committee, you didn't participate in those sit-down meetings?
No.
And as I understand your answer, you provided some input based upon questions from certain members of the selection committee. Can you tell us what dates you provided this information?
No, I can't.
Can you give us a rough estimate of when?
I have bi-monthly meetings with my team, who coincidentally are members of this search committee. And in these bi-monthly meetings, they provide a status report and request for some guidance or clarity. But it's not a, it's not that we had a specific meeting for this.
So, just for the record, when you say your team, you're talking about the employees of Public Works.
That's correct.
Okay. And are we then also testifying that the election committee members who asked you questions and you provided information to were those members of DPW?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Not the school members or not the VITA members? Just the DPW?
Just the DPW.
Okay. I might have a moment. When you say that the selection committee was the negotiator, was it the entire committee or the members of DPW, if you know?
I gave advice about how they actually conducted it, that you have to ask the chairman of the selection committee.
Okay. I have nothing further at this witness.
Okay, do you want to take a brief break prior to starting the cross-examination of this witness? Okay, so we're going to go off the record for a little bit. We're going to have a brief recess of about 10 minutes. Mr. Perez, you're still on the stand, so I'm going to admonish you not to discuss your testimony with the parties or anybody else until these proceedings are over. And right after the break, you may assume your position back on the stand. Okay, we're in recess. We're going off the record at 10:44 a.m. And we have just completed Mr. Cunliffe's direct examination of Mr. Lawrence Perez. We are now going to proceed with the cross-examination by Mr. Abrams on behalf of the purchasing agency. Mr. Abrams, your witness.
No cross-examination, Mr. Camacho. Thank you.
Any cross-examination by interested party IBC, Ms. Tang?
Yes.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Perry.
Good morning.
Earlier you testified about having reviewed Public Law 114, sorry. You reviewed that, correct?
That's correct.
And I will read to you a definition under page 5 of the law.
Ms. Tang, please talk into the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry. Contractor is defined as follows. Under section 5-8A-103, subsection B, contractor shall mean the authorized entity which shall be the signatory on the contract and shall be fully responsible for carrying out the design, construction, financing, and maintenance of the application facility. The contractor may cooperate with any of the entities in any manner the contractor deems appropriate to provide for the financing, design, and construction of the public school facilities envisioned by this act. Do you recall that definition?
I do.
And was it your understanding that the term contractor was to be defined in its broadest terms to include the contractor and basically the team, the proposing team?
Yes.
Okay, and is that basically the definition that you followed in executing and designing the RFP and bidding out the project?
Yes.
Okay. And Mr. Perez, you mentioned earlier on that, I'm not sure if I was a mistake, my misunderstanding, but you said that, I thought I heard you say that the RFP was modified. Were you referring to the agenda that was considered modifications of the original RFP, or are you referring to some other modifications?
I was referring to, the line of question was, did we modify the RFP, and the answer is yes, we modified the RFP. It's through the agenda.
Okay. So, I just want to make sure I understand when you negotiated, when DPW negotiated with IDC, other than the modifications embodied in the agenda, there were no other modifications?
No.
And the agenda was supplied to all proposers?
Oh, that's correct.
And following that line of questioning, you mentioned that there were different aspects of the proposal, and that included the construction, maintenance, the finance portion of it. And there were, I think the word you used was fine-tuning, and when DPW met with IBC representatives.
That's correct.
And when you say fine-tuning, it was really just hammering at the details. And did it include details like specifications?
Actually, that's exactly what it was, specifications.
And these are specifications for the project, I mean, the design, correct?
That's correct.
And is this a pretty typical process that DPW engages in when it negotiates a design build?
Yes.
Okay. And was this pretty much the same process to your, based on your recollection, that was used in the four schools, the EFS four school project?
Absolutely. Same process.
Can I ask the witness not to rub the bottom of the styrofoam cup as we're actually picking that up, and it might obscure the record? Please proceed.
Thank you. Okay, I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Rector.
Yes.
Mr. Perez, you mentioned earlier that in the four schools that were built, that was also an RFP?
That's correct.
Okay. Was that an RFP for all four schools, or was it four separate RFPs?
It was one RFP for all four schools.
Okay.
Actually, frankly, it was for five, but based on the negotiation, it was reduced to four.
Originally for five schools, then reduced to four. Okay. You also mentioned that the RFP had gone out, but you were involved in it subsequently when you became director?
That's correct. The RFP was issued, I would say, 4 months prior to me getting into DPW, and then I took on the tail end to execute the final document.
Okay. Had the selection already been made by the time you came in?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So you don't recall if there were any other, how many bidders there might have been?
I'm guessing maybe it was three, minimum three, but maybe four, but I can get that information.
Okay, that's okay. So there might have been, there was certainly more than one.
That's correct.
To your recollection, was the nature of that RFP similar to the one for JFK? In other words, design, build, finance, maintain?
Absolutely. Just the term is for 20 years.
20 years.
And the funding source was DOI funding, Compact and ECMO. But everything else is same process, procedure, negotiation.
Because most of those leases were just finished. I have not, not as familiar, but in the financing, were you involved in the negotiation of the financing of those RFPs?
No, I was not.
Okay. Was DPW at all involved?
DPW was part of the committee, but the lead, as is the case with this current center, was the GEDA folks.
Okay. So when it came to the financing of the four schools, GEDA was involved in that?
Absolutely.
All right. Do you recall, okay, going back, just to clarify again in my mind, the contract was already selected when you came on board?
That's correct.
The RFP was issued about 4 months before you came up with the contract. How long did the negotiations take before the contract was actually issued? In other words, was the negotiation as long as this one, or, and again, that I know.
Actually it's comparable in the sense that the legislature had to be involved to approve a ground lease. So there was a new one there involved, and it's very similar to 29114 statute, that any deviations in the financing or any special requirement, it has to go to the legislature for approval. In this particular tender, however, there was not a need for that.
I'm sorry?
In this particular tender, the most recent one, there was not a need for establishment of that legislative action, subsequent legislative action.
So in the previous four schools, the legislature had to be involved in the final
lease agreement, that's correct.
In this particular one, the legislature already...
They explicitly allowed it or authorized it in 29114.
So based on the draft, if things were to proceed, the government of Guam would not have to go back to the legislature for approval of the lease?
That's correct.
And to your recollection, because one of those schools is the high school, was the high school, and that's the Okudu High School. And you mentioned throughout any kind of negotiation, there's always going to be changes. How materially, were there various addendum also to that RFP issued prior to the selection?
Prior to the
company who has the lease agreement now. You mentioned there are some addendum to the current RFP. Were there, to your recollection, do you know if there were any addendum to the four schools RFP?
I don't recollect.
Okay. Were there changes in the specifications you don't remember if there were any addendum on the four schools?
No.
Okay. Regarding the high school of Okudu, throughout this RFP, I saw that many of them says to build a school similar to Okudu.
In terms of amenities?
Yes.
In terms of the functionality and operability of the school. But keep in mind the size of Okudu is a fraction of what's needed at JFK. So you're talking a bigger school, you know, bigger facilities versus the Okudu school, which is smaller.
Do you recollect how big a school, how much bigger the school would be?
I can get the details, but I understand the Okudu to be no more than 1,200 students, and the JFK to be about 2,300 students.
So that would be a high school
level.
Almost twice as large as Okudu, approximately. We were talking 1,200 to 2,300.
I'm thinking the 800 number seems to be a better recollection for me because of the amounts that we had available. I had to downsize the sizing of the school. So I'm thinking it's 800 versus 2,300. But, you know, I can get those actual figures for you.
800 being the size of Okadu?
Yes.
I thought Okudu was already in the 1,200 range.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's 1,200, and then we had to negotiate downward because of available funding, because of the size of the school.
So is Okudu already overcrowded?
No comment.
So your understanding then of our P of JFK that it is supposed to be significantly larger than Okudu.
Absolutely.
Okay. I also remember you saying something to the effect that you were not you had a committee or had your people do the specifications because they had to give you an executive summary of the specifications. Is that correct?
The specifications were specific to more code compliance and statute compliance. There's a law that dictates how big a high school has to be that was enacted after the first contract. I think it brought it up to like maximum a given high school is like 2,300 students. So the gist of the specifications and modifications thereof had to do with time extensions, stating that it's an RFP as opposed to a bid. Even identifying the code of the day, the UBC 94 versus the, I think DPW is telling some of the code, and maybe some quantity changes and whatnot, but for the most part, the specifications were amended to agenda for the RFP. I forget the other component. That you were mentioning or
who was involved in the specification? Who in your committee? Who was the team? I guess that put out the specifications in the RFP.
That was our division of vertical CIP. So chief engineer Ray Padua was the lead. He's a professional engineer, and you had folks like you had a couple of engineer supervisors that were involved in that. But again, it's a division of verticals and CIPs within DPW. They normally turn out these type of RFPs. And it's actually the same group that turned out the first RFP.
Okay, so then the current, if I understand you correctly, the committee, your team of engineers who put out the specifications for the JFK specifications were pretty much the same people, more or less, who designed the specifications for Okudu.
That's correct.
You mentioned earlier when the RFP for Okudu was out initially, or the specifications, you said that the school went through a downsizing because of funding? Did I understand you correctly? The original RFP that went out...
The original RFP was for five schools, and in the negotiation, we determined that the size of the population varied, and their representation was for a certain quantity. When we found out we only had so much money, we had to negotiate downward in terms of either removing a class, I mean a school, now we're down to four, to demolishing and reconstructing a new school versus just renovating, and even downsizing the enrollment, or say the population of a given school. So we did all those three in the negotiations just to stay within the $6.1 million cap.
That's the amount of compact impact money that could be used ultimately each year.
For the next 20 years.
Okay.
Again, it's 20 years, not 30 years. So
that was the constraint.
Yes.
Okay. Was there a similar constraint in the funding for JFK?
You need to query the deed of folks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I understand you correctly, then in designing the previous four schools, you had knowledge of a maximum amount you could work with. So were the bidders aware of that maximum amount of funding?
Yes, that was represented at the very funding.
At the very, okay, that was part of the RFP.
Right.
Okay. And so based on that, the bidders, your RFP originally was for five schools, but then in the negotiation and the selection, whoever you chose ended up building only four schools. Did that happen? In other words, the difference from the five originally going out and then the four final, was that an addendum or was that after selection?
When the RFP was tendered, it was for proposed five schools. Most were new construction, the elementary, middle school, high school, and a renovation of a middle school or elementary school. I forget to get it up to code compliance. There were addenda associated with that, and they were rated and ranking based on selection criteria. Based on the selection criteria, the Development Educational Finance Foundation was rated number one. We then started the negotiations with them in terms of the ground lease, in terms of the, you know, again, the build of this thing, the maintenance, and so forth. And based on the cap of $6.1 million annually for the next 20 years, the negotiations netted for schools for a certain size and cancellation of one of the components that was represented. So that's how it was, the contract for the lease agreements were actually signed up for.
Okay. And were those schools, to your knowledge, built pretty much on time as scheduled?
Generally speaking, yes. Some glitches, but force majeure and squatters and stuff like that.
Approximately how long did it take to build the high school?
There's actually timelines, plus or minus 18 to 24 months.
18 to 24 months.
And that was negotiated also. There wasn't as much pressure. We didn't have shutdowns of school at the time when we were awarding this contract.
Because I recall in an earlier, in your earlier state, in the pre-hearing, anyway, I do recall you saying that this JFK was supposed to be completed, whoever gets the contract will be, is to complete the school in 9 months.
That's correct. And that was all part of the negotiations.
Okay.
And definitive, obviously, securities, if you will, to make sure that it gets done. There's also LDs that are going to be associated with this.
Liquidated damages, if they do not perform.
That's correct.
That's going to be in the contract.
The final contract. That was what was, I decided to refer to the session committee to make sure of. And in the negotiations, it seems to pan out that the work hours and shifts and 7 days a week, that thing is going to be occurring.
Going back to the nature of this, when DPW issues out contracts for various construction projects, does it normally use an RFP or does it use an IFB? What is the more common or prevalent?
For full designs. That are already in place, and we already know the quantities, definite quantities and units themselves, and the actual scope, we put it out to invitation to bid, because we're going for the lowest responsive bid or most responsive lowest bid.
And what kind of project would that be?
Again, building, JFK could easily have been a design bid built, where we design first, and then we put it out to bid, but because of the compressed time frame, and there were a lot of ongoing parallel facets that we had to deal with, not to mention the law itself specified, probably the 29-1-4 specified it has to be an RFP. We structured it for an RFP. But normally, DPW will do a design bid build where we design it first and then we put it out, we design it through an RFP process and then we construct it through an invitation to bid process.
From your own personal experience, which do you prefer?
I prefer the compromise between the two. It's a multi-step bid.
Mm-hmm.
And basically three envelopes. The first envelope is eliminate the 5x9. Just put those on the preliminary record. After you narrow it down to top five, you open up the second envelope and you rate their proposal. What are they offering? What kind of value are we going to get out of this thing? And based on criteria again, and based on the top two, you open up the third envelope, that's the price. Once I said that.
So in the end, it is, okay, you're pre-qualifying to ensure that whoever makes it to the next stage are qualified and can do the project.
That's correct.
Okay. Have you done that type of...
Not in DPW, but at GTA when I was there.
But not at DPW?
Not yet.
I'm just curious, why?
I guess with the line...
Have you found it successful at GTA, but not, but have not been able to use it at DPW?
The line agencies have a little more complication than autonomous agencies do. And even opinions on how to process these tenders, it's very complicated and bureaucratic. So fortunately, we've not come across that. I mean, for example, in this particular tender, I would have issued a multi-sub bid, but it was explicit in the statute that it has to be an RFP. So.
Okay, I think that answers my question. Thank you very much, Mr. Paris.
You're welcome.
Mr. Paris, I just have one clarifying question. Now, you, in your direct examination by Mr. Cunliffe, you had stated that the selection committee was composed of the customer, or there were some members of the selection committee in this RFP that were from the customer. Is the customer you're referring to, is that DOE?
That's correct. The Guam Public School System or DOE now. Yes.
Thank you. And then, is there any redirect, Mr. Cunliffe?
Thank you. Mr. Paris, I just want to clarify. When we were talking on direct examination, you indicated that there had been some modifications made during the discussions with the awarded or the selected proposer, IDC. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. But then when Ms. Kang asked you, you indicated there were no modifications in the discussions with them.
That's correct, too. If I can explain. The governing activity here from cradle to grave, from the advertising to the actual signed contract, again, negotiations are in there and agendas are in there, is 29114. So that governs everything. The RFP specification is governed by the same 29114. However, we're zooming into specifics. How many desks, how many chairs, square footage, building, stuff like that. And it's supposed to be a bid opening by a certain date. We can issue addenda to extend the date. We can issue addenda to increase quantities, increase quantities, change scopings and whatnot, off the RP, provided it's consistent with the 29114. So every time we do these addenda, it's all within those guidelines, the law itself, and the procurement regulations. So those are never compromised. But we do an addenda on the RP procurement process within those two activities. When we negotiate the second half, it's all within those same two guidelines as well. Everything we negotiate is consistent with 29114, is consistent with our procurement regulations and any other governing rules. So, that's why I'm saying they're both correct. You questioned me on the front end, or the tail end, and she's questioning me on the front end, they're both correct.
So, after the selection had been made for the number one proposer, modifications have been made?
Within the parameters of those laws, yes.
Okay. And those are in writing, as you indicated, I think, earlier.
Yes, and they're part of the confidential stuff.
Right. And you deem them to be confidential?
Yes, because the contractor is giving me stuff, and I can't release it until there's a large event.
And they haven't been made part of the procurement package.
If they're made part of it, I would like to point it out. They should not be part of the...
Now, in response to the public auditor's question,
You indicated that this is a real, a much more accelerated time frame for the construction than the Upadu and other schools.
That's correct.
I mean, I think you said 18 to 24 months for those schools and 9 months for this one.
That's correct.
And you indicated that that entails determination of work hours, shifts, and possible 7-day-a-week construction schedule.
That's correct.
Thank you. I have nothing further.
Is there any recross, Mr. Abrams?
No, Mr. Camacho, no.
Is there any recross, Ms. Ting?
No, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Perez, you're excused as a witness. Of course, you're subject to recall by any of the parties. Likewise, I don't know if you're also subject to being called as a witness in the either IBC's or the purchasing agency's case in chief. But so long as these proceedings go on, I admonish you not to discuss your testimony today with any of the parties or any of the other witnesses. You understand that?
Okay.
Thank you very much. You may step down. Thank you. Mr. Pemla?
If you call Andrew Leon Guerrero.
Mr. Leon Guerrero, please proceed to the witness table. Now the witness to sign in, please have the witness sworn.
Andrew S. Miller.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Connell, your witness.
Thank you. Mr. Leon Guerrero, where are you employed?
At the Department of DPW.
And what do you do there?
I am the Deputy Director.
And how long have you held that position?
About 3 years right now.
And prior to that position, where, what did you do?
I was the Asset Resource Coordinator at the Office of Homeland Security.
And how long did you hold that position?
Approximately 3 years as well.
And your position at the Department of Public Works, were you involved with the selection committee for the finance, design, and construction of the new JFK High School?
Yes, I was.
And how did you obtain the appointment to that selection committee?
Actually, I was appointed. I was appointed in charge of CIP at the Department of Public Works by the director, Mr. Larry Perez.
Okay. What is CIP?
CIP Capital Improvement Project.
And is that one of your positions at DPW?
It's one of them, yes.
Okay. and is the person in charge with a CIP then sit on all bids and selection committees?
Not necessarily, but the ones with high profile bids such as this, we tend to submit them.
Was there a specific appointment for you to sit on that committee, or you just did it as your position as the CIP?
Both, actually, because of my position at CIP and the director have personally asked me to sit on this and become the chairperson.
Okay. So did he appoint you as the chairperson?
No, he
didn't.
Okay.
And do you recall when that appointment took place?
Sometime in early October or November of 2008.
And do you recall when was the first time that that selection committee met?
I think prior to, let's see, I'm trying to remember the dates. Availability of the RFP.
Okay. And when you say the availability, you mean the fact that it was actually sent out?
Correct.
Okay. And what was the purpose of the selection committee meeting prior to the RFP being sent out?
Yes, we just wanted to instruct them of their responsibilities as evaluators for the RFP, how to actually evaluate them, and whatever other miscellaneous responsibilities that came with being an evaluator. We wanted to make sure that they were thoroughly addressed and explained to them all.
Now, in a general sense, how does one evaluate an RFP?
Well, there are guidelines that are listed in every category of the evaluation component. So these guidelines are what is evaluated on a science, for example, collateral support in this case, how well would the company, the contractor, be able to provide the collateral equipment, what types of collateral equipment, and so forth and so forth, being one component of the total package. Although the RFP is 70% financing and 30% others, collateral equipment will go under others.
And was there a specific breakdown of the others?
There was the 70% financing, there was the collateral equipment, there was the maintenance agreement, and I think that was it, yeah.
Now, in your duties as the deputy director and as the head of the CIP section of DPW, how does one go about rating a financial proposal?
As far as the evaluators are concerned?
Yes.
Okay, well, what we did prior to actually selecting the evaluators is, obviously it was a 70% financing, so we definitely needed data on board on this. With that representation being there, I feel very comfortable that we've at least taken care of that part. But just to take it one step further, we also invited the CFO of the GPSS at the time, which was Doreen Kusoftman. So she represented the GPSS as the chief financial officer. So having two finance experts at the table made me feel very comfortable. That's why there's two groups.
And the after the proposals were, I guess, submitted, after the 11/24 date, How many times did the committee meet?
Oh, you said the committee, the evaluation.
Evaluation committee.
They met several times thereafter, because what had happened after that was they had to go through negotiations.
Do you remember the first time they met? After the original meeting, as you said, happened before 11:24.
Are you referring to a date?
Yes.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Do you remember a specific time frame, or was it more before Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, before Christmas, after?
It would probably been a week or two thereafter.
After the first meeting? The one that happened before November 24th?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall when the next meeting might have been?
It would have probably been tonight with commission.
And was that the only two meetings that they had?
There may have been others that I wasn't involved with.
Now, were there interviews scheduled with the various proposers?
Yes, there was.
Did you attend those?
I attended two.
Those meetings with the proposers, where they made their proposals to the selection committee, were they tape recorded?
To my recollection, they were.
Do you know whether those tapes have been made part of the record?
I know they haven't.
And I believe I subpoenaed you to bring those tapes.
Yes, we have brought whatever tapes we did have, although I don't know if I can say this freely, but we're not sure if that's proprietary, so we're just holding on to it.
I'd like to object to the use of any of those tapes in this proceeding. I believe they're proprietary, they're part of the procurement record. The fact that GCI subpoenaed them doesn't take them out of their change the fact that this is a proprietary and covered by part of the procurement record. We've got negotiations with IDC, and we have been questioning that regard as well.
Okay. As to Mr. Cullen?
Yeah. I was made aware not very long ago that perhaps these meetings had in fact been tape recorded. And I spoke to Mr. Weisenberger from the Attorney General's office because he said they should have been included in the records of the public auditor as part of this matter. He wasn't sure if they had. And I would agree that based upon the ruling that has been made in this case, that they are probably proprietary matters. I think under the law they may have been open to the public because it was a public meeting and a public presumably announced in the newspaper and the like. But they should be part of the record. And at the very least, I would ask that yourself and the public auditor, take possession of them from Mr. Leon Guerrero and make them part of the procurement record in this case.
Well, I can tell you that the Office of Public Accountability has not received any tape recordings of any meetings. And I can also tell you, as to the motion to exclude these tapes, first of all, the decision concerning the protective order precludes the use of the proposals by the parties and any information contained in the proposals. That's what the law requires. However, the law also requires some other responsibilities by the purchasing agency, specifically 5 GCA, section 5249, subsection C, states that sound recordings of all pre-bid conferences, negotiations, arising from a request for proposal and discussions with vendors concerning small purchase procurement. That's part of the procurement record, and pursuant to Section 5 GCA, Section 5251, those are in the public portions of the procurement record. Okay? However, as no award has been made, I'm going to ask that the purchasing agency redact any information on these tapes, any information from the proposals that are contained on these tapes. Yes, the Office of Public Accountability, of course, would receive a complete copy or a complete recording of those tapes. How long, Mr. Abrams, do you think it would take you to provide this material?
Well, I don't know. I'm suffering from somewhat of a deficit of information here. Apparently, Mr. Weisenberger knew about this, but I didn't. May I ask, Mr. Camacho, how many tapes we're talking about?
Well, I'll let Mr. Cunliffe proceed in his questioning. I think that would help out. But generally, I know that we don't have these tapes. These tapes, or at least significant portions of them, as I just stated in the law here, according to the law, are a public record, with the exception of the information contained in proposals. I don't know how many tapes or what these tapes might contain, as we have not received them.
Well, just ballparking it to respond to your question, I think to edit a 90-minute audio cassette tape might take one of our staff maybe, it's a 90-minute tape, you know, there's an hour and a half right there. So I'd say 3 or 4 hours per tape, you know, considering the speed of government work. That's probably as good an estimate.
So approximately 3 or 4 hours per tape?
I'd say...
For 90 minutes?
I'd say let's call it 4 hours per tape and try to adhere to that. Assuming they're 90-minute tapes, and I don't know how
much... Well, let's discuss this issue as to the disclosure of the tapes after Mr. Leon Guerrero's testimony. Okay. Please proceed, Mr. Plummer.
Thank you. Mr. Leon Guerrero, how many tapes did you bring down?
I'm not sure exactly how many, but we do have them with us.
I mean, is it in a packet? Is it
yes, it's in a little envelope.
Okay. And are these tapes including the discussions that took place when the committee, the evaluators got together every time they met? Do you have tapes of all of those meetings?
No, we don't.
Just of the three presentations by the proposers?
Yes.
Now, you attended two of those sessions you indicated. I believe you did not attend the one from GCIF.
No, I didn't.
How long a time were the meetings with the other two proposers?
Anywhere between 2 to 3 hours.
For each meeting?
For each meeting.
Now, you indicated that you were... You had Gita on board to assist in the financial aspect.
That's correct.
And how was Gita's, what was Gita's involvement in assisting in the financial aspect?
They are the government's, the government's financial agency that deals with these types of issues, so I felt very comfortable that they were part of the evaluation committee.
But I mean, I know that they have certain requirements of law to assist the government in financing, bonding, various other things, but how were they to help the committee in this regard?
I just said because it was a 70% financial situation that somebody from NIDA, who is a financial expert, would be good to have on the evaluation committee.
So it was merely their participation that you thought would help?
Absolutely, yes.
Now, prior to the meeting, which I believe took place on January 15th, 2009, with the various proposers, did the evaluators, the selection committee, did they see the proposals before that day?
I think they did.
Before the January 15th, the proposals?
Yes.
Okay. And were they reviewed as a group? No, I'm sorry, let me explain. Did the members get together as a group and review each of the proposals?
What had happened when the proposals were presented, they were all in the same room at the same time, but when the evaluation portion of the presentation was done, it was done individually.
So you mean the actual scoring of the pieces of paper?
Yes.
Okay. But I think that my question was, for instance, prior to January 15th, when the evaluators got together and the proposals were presented, you indicated, I believe, there were meetings of the committee prior to that time.
Oh, okay.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And during those meetings, were all of the committee members present?
I think everyone should have been present, because either that or they were separately briefed. They may not have been in the same room at the same time, but they may have been separately briefed.
And during those previous meetings, you indicated there may have been briefings. Who would have provided those briefings?
It would have been our CIP chief engineer, which is Mr. Rekador, or Josephine Torres, who's our acting chief planner.
Okay. And those presentations would have had to do with the construction aspect of the project?
Actually, they were all.
Okay. And did they, Mr. Padua, or I'm sorry, the other woman's name was?
Josephine Torres.
Ms. Torres. Did they do a breakdown of the RFPs and then present that to the committee?
Yes, of the different components of the evaluation portion of it, everything was broken down to all the evaluators and briefed on every single one of them.
Okay, and that was done by Mr. Padua and Ms. Torres?
Yes, well, yes.
Okay. And during those meetings, my understanding is that there were no tape recordings.
Not during those meetings.
Then, on the 15th of January, when the presentations were made by the various proposers, that's when, you said, after those presentations were made, the participants, the selection committee or evaluators, then separately scored some sheets, some papers that indicated their ranking.
That's correct.
Okay. And then those were turned in to whom?
Mrs. Torres. And Ms. Torres.
Okay. And that was done actually immediately after the evaluations had occurred, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
And so either later in the afternoon of the 15th or in the early morning of the 16th of January 2009, it was known how the ratings had come out.
That's correct.
Did you turn in a rating form?
No, I didn't. I was not on the evaluator.
Okay.
At this point, I would like an offer of proof from Mr. Cunliffe. We're way off track on his protest. I just reviewed his protest again, and I just can't connect these questions to any of the issues raised in his protest.
Well, we join in this objection, Mr. Camacho. I almost made the same objection just now myself. I don't know where this is going, but it looks like a runaway train to me.
Mr. Cunliffe?
Yes, Mr. Camacho, thank you. The issue is the evaluation and the determination as to whether or not this proposal that has been negotiated and been in negotiation with what was considered to be the number one proposer was appropriate, and the value that has been put on the proposals, which we have no access to, but the public auditor and yourself, I presume, do have access to those documents, and the other financial aspects of this matter. We have raised the issue of the financial viability, the selection based upon the 70% financial viability, and I'm trying to determine how the selectors have gone about determining that 70% financial rating of the viability of the various bidders, and Mr. Leon Guerrero is shedding light upon that process.
Right. Yes, Mr.
I'm sorry, but finding out how they proposed to handle the 70% component on finance and finding out whether IBC met that requirement are two different things, of course, and the first one is irrelevant and the second one is confidential. That's the way it looks from right here.
Okay. Anything to add, Ms. Tank?
No, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to overrule the objection, okay, first and foremost, in terms of confidentiality that you've just raised. I note that the dates, times, subject matter, and names of participating at any meeting, including government employees that is in any way related to a particular procurement, that's part of the public portion of the procurement record. Therefore, Mr. Cunliffe can explore those issues. Now, as to relevancy, I find that these questions do pertain to the heart of Mr. Cunliffe's protest or his client's appeal. Okay? Please proceed, Mr. Cunliffe.
Thank you.
Mr. Leongrel, who, to your knowledge, were the evaluators?
There were two from DPW, Mr. Dionysia de Leon, Mr. Jerry Cario, Dr. Geraldine James, Dr. Gail Hendricks, Eunice Affleby, Antoinette Leon Guerrero, and Dr. Doreen Chrysostomo.
Now, the So the use or the involvement of GEDA was only to provide their input and information. They didn't evaluate.
No, actually, Ms. Antoinette Longo did evaluate. She was an evaluator.
Oh, she's from
GEDA. She's from GEDA, yes.
To your knowledge, after the presentations were made in January of 2009, have the evaluators, the selection committee, gotten together with yourself and others to continue this process in any way?
After the ranking?
Yes. And after the rankings were done, when was the next time that there was a meeting with regard to the evaluators, the selection committee, and
Charlie Hill, probably a couple of weeks after, and about a couple of weeks, yeah. Could have been soon.
And following that meeting, were there follow-up meetings?
With the proposal, or just at the evaluation committee?
The evaluation committee and the proposal.
Yes, there were a couple more after that, yes, because they had continued to negotiate.
And did you participate in those meetings?
In some of them, yes, I did.
And who, to your knowledge, was negotiating on behalf of the selection committee?
The owner.
And after the rankings had been determined, did you participate in any off-island travel with regard to this project?
Yes, I think in late August I had joined the team, the Nagita team, to New York.
And is that the time when the news is reporting an attempt to get some funding for this project?
I think the current time is taking so, yeah.
And was that the purpose of going there?
From what I understood, as far as the government of Guam being there, was that we were there. May I use metaphors here, Mr. Cummings?
You're justifying, you can use
whatever
you
need. Okay, thanks. It's just like if I was out to get a loan, right? In order for me to get that loan, I would need to provide all the financial statements that I have, how much I make, where I work, that sort of thing. So my understanding in all this, aside from being the chairperson of the RFP, was that the government was there to provide that sort of information.
Okay. So this was there to assist in the obtaining of financing to do the project.
The testimony was it was there to provide financial statements. It was not there to assist in obtaining the financing.
Ms. Carlo?
I think it's splitting hairs. I mean, he said they were providing the financial assistance in order somebody could get a loan.
Could you please rephrase the question, especially if you're quoting from his prior testimony?
I'm not sure I can quote from his prior testimony, but
I can clarify that.
Okay,
Mr. Hunter. Okay, we were there to assist, and what I mean by assist was provide all the necessary documents, all the necessary information to a group in order for this group to do what they had to do on the financial part of the scheme of things. We weren't there to, or at least I wasn't there, to do anything outside of that.
But was it your understanding that this group that you're discussing was trying to obtain dollars in order for this project to be undertaken?
No, that was not my understanding at all.
There was a report about certificates of participation. Was this meeting about certificates of participation?
Objection. They're going through the area covered by the protective order. They're going to identify any report. What kind of report was another media report that we're talking about here?
Ms. Carlo?
No, there's a rather thick document that was produced, Series 2009A, Certificates of Participation, John F. Kennedy High School Project, $69,030,000. And I'm just asking if this is the document that, this is a meeting which produced these documents.
It is inquiring into matters that we consider heavy to consider part of the criminal record with a draft document, a preliminary statement, and they're not generally available to the public and has never been submitted as part of the evidence in the state, except to the extent there are 3 or 4 copies or pages from that, excerpt from that, that was attached to the protest.
Mr. Abel?
Purchasing authority definitely objects to this, and this is, goes back to one of the remarks I made at the outset of this appeal hearing, and that is the retrospective nature of the protective order. There have been documents bandied about, and I don't know how Mr. Cunliffe got his hands on these. He may have gotten them in a perfectly legitimate way, but that doesn't remove them from the scope of the protective order. So all of these sensitive materials are proprietary in nature, since they are part of the negotiating process for the finance. And the second thing is, Mr. Camacho, don't you think these agreements are also excludable in terms of testimony because they're inconclusive? There hasn't been an award made. The financing hasn't been put in place. So until that gels, I don't know how productive it would be to go into tentative, inconclusive documents which may or may not be used, which are certainly not in their final form, and it just doesn't seem like it has traction, if you follow my point. So I guess I'm making a bifurcated objection. The first would be that they are within the scope of the protective order, being the work product of the negotiating team in New York. And then secondly, we have no idea if these documents are ever going to be used in the form that Mr. Cunliffe has. So their probative value is zero, and even if there was probative value, with all due respect, I believe it is covered by the protective order.
Ms. Tang and Mr. Abrams, these documents that Mr. Cunliffe is proposing to question the witness about, are they part of the interested party's proposal? Yes or no?
Certainly on all these issues. Oh, well, in terms of the proposal that was submitted, no, at the time of the submission, it was contemplated that it's part of the financing package. You can't have this at the time the proposal was submitted, because obviously the negotiation has to go through first before you can go out there and get the financing packages. But it's certainly part of, it is one proprietary and certainly developed as part of
contemplated to be developed as part of the program. And there has been an award.
Once there's been an award, that's a different matter.
Okay, I'm going to, well, first of all, I don't even think Mr. Cunliffe has offered these documents to you or the witness. Okay, to what documents are you referring to, Mr. Cunliffe?
This is a...
Well, how about this? Can you please show that to the other parties?
I think
we can verify.
We've got it off the internet.
It's not off the internet.
I don't.
Well, could you just? I don't review the documents that Mr. Cunliffe is proposing to, and tell me if they're part of your proposal or not.
Have they been included on a witness or an exhibit list?
Yes.
Whose exhibit list would that be?
Mine.
Have they been offered as an exhibit at this point?
The only thing that we've received in terms of the record for this case is the attachment to the August 6, 2011 letter from Mr. Hunter, which, it was the notice of appeal, and there's only an excerpt for about a couple of pages from it. That is all that was offered in this case. This is the first time I've seen this. From the front of it, looks like they took it off of somebody's database. It's not like a Google where you find a link and you download. Our understanding of the dissemination of this document was that it was disseminated, there was a limited dissemination. Yes, it was available through the internet, but it's not publicly available to anyone who wanted to Google it. And so, to the extent that it's on the internet, doesn't mean that it's a publicly disseminated document. But this cover sheet clearly shows that it was a, and to have access, you have to have certain permission. So they obtained this through someone who actually had permission, downloaded it from that page.
Well, let me ask you this again, once again, okay. Is it your position, Ms. Tang, your position, Mr. Abrams, that these documents are part of IBC's disposal?
Yes, we do. We take that position.
Okay. Mr. Cunliffe, any response to the argument that these documents are part of their proposal?
Have you received them as part of the proposal submitted by the parties in this case to the public auditor as being part of the documents in the proposal?
Okay, I'm going to sustain the procurement record in this case. It's rather voluminous. I'm going to sustain the objection so long as it temporarily, just so we can take a review of the procurement record and see if those documents are in fact included as part of the proposals that are in fact sealed. And I ask Mr. Cunliffe not to inquire about those documents until we have the opportunity to review that. However, certainly if they're not, and the objection's overruled, I'm going to allow you to question this witness concerning those documents, but at this time I'm just going to sustain the objection temporarily until we take this issue under advisement and review the record in this case. Okay, please proceed.
That's fine. Mr. Yongarero, when you went with the proposer to, I think you said New York?
That's right.
Who else went from the government of Guam?
From the government of Guam, Bertha Williams from DBMR. Shannon Titan Lujan from the legal office. Myself. And the GEDA officials.
And do you remember who the GEDA officials were?
Yes, Mr. Tony Bloss. General Manager, Tina Garcia, the deputy, and Mr. Lester Thompson.
Now, the metaphor you provided was indicate that in order, you were providing documentation that would assist someone in obtaining a loan.
That's correct.
And that was your purpose, you and the other members of the Guam delegation?
Well, my purpose was to justify and to clarify and answer any questions that may have been proposed while we were there concerning what Guam's position in the RFP, in the GFK RFP.
And with whom did you meet?
Well, actually, we met with, I'm trying to call their names, the Jaffe Piper Group.
Objection, we're getting into matters that I think are subject to the, I think, procurement, part of the procurement record, these are the underwriters, and I think that questioning who they are, what they did for us, who is present,
Mr. Camacho, may I add to that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
This thing is on solid ground without objection, in my opinion, because we're getting into the, you know, they're organizing financing, and Mr. Conliff is trying to find out who they were talking to about the financing. If this goes the other way, then Mr. Cunliffe has inside information from IBC as to where they can get financing. I mean, that's impermissible. They shouldn't know who IBC is using to provide financing for this. because that would give them an unfair advantage. Well, we don't know who they might be asking to provide financing, and we have no right to know about that. I mean, when I say we, I mean the other proposers, the other bidders. This is confidential. If I find a good deal on financing somewhere, the last thing I want is for my competitor to find out who that is. And that's what we're getting into. So what I'm leading up to, Mr. Camacho, is to move to strike any response that may be on the record to that impermissible question. Thank you.
Mr. Camacho, who was present at a government meeting where the government of Guam was involved is clearly something that is a public record. I didn't ask him anything about what was discussed other than the fact that he gave us a metaphor as to what they were doing there. My clients turned in their financing to the people back at that time, and it's in the records before this body as to who their financiers were. So the situation is not something that is going to amount to us having a privileged information, and I already have the information. It's public record.
Ms. Chang?
Not quote on this, just because we got the information from whatever source doesn't make it in a record that becomes public domain. I think that it, just because a meeting with a government official, so it doesn't make that also not covered by the record. It's still part of the journey. It's an ongoing process.
Okay. I'm going to overrule your objection, Ms. Tang, and remind the parties once again that although the protective order does cover information contained in the proposals, that's what's protected here, pursuant to 5 GCA section 5249C and 5 GCA section 5251, what is public is the date, time, or A rather, or 5249A is the date, time, subject matter, and names of participants at any meeting, including government employees, that is in any way related to a particular procurement. Okay? And I make my ruling on the basis that this witness has testified that he went to New York. He described his role, and these meetings are all, and the participants therein, all public. However, Mr. Cummins, I will caution you once again, do not go into any of the informations that are contained in any of the other proposals. Please proceed.
Thank you. Was this the first time that you had attended any such meeting?
Yes.
How long did these meetings require? How much time?
It had depended on the type of or the it really depended on how long these negotiations were taking place, anywhere between 2 hours, sometimes as long as 5 hours.
Okay. How many days would it encompass?
I'd say total of about 4 or 5 days of.
I have nothing further.
Mr. Abrams, your witness.
Do you think it's a good time to take a lunch break?
Okay. Well, noting that it is 12:60, okay. When do we want to reconvene after lunch? 2?
That's fine.
2 o'clock? Okay. All right. Okay, we're going to break for lunch. And Mr. Leon Guerrero, I'm going to admonish you that essentially this is still testifying and these proceedings are still ongoing. I'm going to admonish you not to talk about your testimony to the parties or to the other witnesses in this case until the until these proceedings have been concluded. Okay? And when you come back in the room, please take your stand again. And we're going to proceed at 2 o'clock today. Thank you. We are off the record at 12:17.